Got the tickets, Sergey?
Yep.
Now, what movie are we watch?
Ooh, an adventure.
Oh, where are we?
Ooh, it's a tomb.
Okay, stay close to me, and whatever you do, don't set off any... Oh, booby traps.
Uh-oh.
Sergey, run!
Meerkat, you can get 2-for-1 cinema tickets every Tuesday or Wednesday when you switch your car or home insurers, so compare the market.
With a qualifying product, 1 membership per year, participating cinemas, 2 standard tickets only, cheapest free. T's and C's apply.
Wrestling fans, and welcome to the second of a few best of specials we'll be releasing as we prepare for the Pro Wrestling Spotlight Rewind that'll kick off at the end of March. The Pro Wrestling Spotlight was the only wrestling podcast and is the only wrestling podcast that brings you back over 30 years with vintage audio featuring some of the biggest names of that time. Today, we're going to review some best of shows from March. And we have shows from March of 1990, 1991. There were show numbers 48, 50, and 99 of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight, which aired on 1240 AM WGBB in West Babylon, New York. And before we bring on our co-host and producer, creative director Marsh, I want to tell you about Patreon. Thank you, everybody, for still being a part of the Patreon account, patreon.com/John Arezzi. So stay with us. We will be upgrading, doing some revamping of the show on the Patreon account. So just stay tuned for all of that. But go to patreon.com/John Arezzi. $5 a month gets you in the door. That gives you access to all the archives of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight. So check it out today. And there are other levels there. And each level that you participate in, the higher the level you get, the more exclusive content you get. And why don't we bring on Marsh right now?
Hey-o.
Hey, Marsh, how you doing, man? It's a big week for you.
This is the grind. This is what do you call it? Like when it's like, I mean, it's crunch time, right?
Yeah,
this is where everything's got to come together.
Yeah, it's the calm before the storm.
You think? I almost feel like it's reverse. I feel like it's getting through the storm to get to the eye of the storm, because that's where the peace is when you're finally doing it. You know what I mean? Like, this is where all the chaos comes up.
Then the waters get calm. Once it's over with and done, and you got your life partner, and you guys will be living, as they say, happily ever after.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the
guarantee. I never wishful thinking, right? You got it.
Yeah.
I never went down that road. Couldn't do it. I'm kind of like Bill Maher. You know who Bill Maher is?
Yeah, I know Bill Maher. Why? What's his deal?
He's never got married, never wanted to get married, doesn't have any kids, never wanted kids. I'm kind of in the same boat as Bill Maher.
Yeah. I mean, I've always been kind of that same way, to be honest. But I guess, I mean, I don't know, this isn't a podcast about me and my personal life, but ultimately I had gotten married and divorced young, and I never wanted kids to begin with. And I wasn't like keen on getting married the first time so much as like, just seemed like the right thing to do. And then afterwards I was like, I'm never getting married again, because of what I really felt I learned there was that it's just a form, and it's a very complicated form. And at the end of the day, you're either going to stay together with someone or you're not, regardless of any kind of ceremony or paperwork that's involved. Yeah. But at this point also, I mean, here we are, fast forward a ton of time later. I've been with my fiance for 10 years, and it's like, look, this isn't like one of those, like, well, what else are you going to do? It was just like, it felt right. Like I saw the ring in the store and I looked at it and I was like, she has to have this. This was like made for her. And then it was all like, I got to do this. And it just kind of all the emotions came up of like, why am I not? Every reason I'd given myself and why I would never do it again didn't seem relevant now to this relationship. And I was like, you know what? Let's do the thing, you know?
Let's do it.
We're excited. It's going to be a good time.
Excellent. Well, I wish you the best. I wish I could be there. But as you could tell by the logo on my shirt, if you could see it, it's the Mets. I can't even.
It's the other side.
I'm in a beautiful Airbnb down in Port St. Lucie. Just got my nephew from the airport a few hours ago, and we're going out to our first nice Italian meal tonight with the senior citizen special.
The early bird special.
Yeah, so I'm kind of psyched. I'll be down here literally for about 10, 12 days covering baseball, meeting with Terry Collins again and J.P. Ricciardi and working on the baseball podcast stuff, seeing a bunch of games. So I'm in my element. This is kind of our annual sabbatical that I do with my nephew. And we didn't go last year, but and then pandemic was a few years ago. So, I mean, this is something we've been doing since he was a kid. And we're so excited to be down here seeing Mets baseball. But anyway, we got some wrestling to talk about. Some wrestling.
Yeah, we got March of 1990.
Oh, what a year.
If we have time, we'll see. We can get into 91 just a smidge because there was a lot that happened on that one. But in March of 1990, there was a lot going on. Like Lex Luger nearly beat Ric Flair. The Four Horsemen attacked Sting ringside. Basically, everyone got injured in this angle. Luger's out injured. Sting's out injured. I believe in the same night, Sid Vicious got injured. Like, there was just... Yeah. That's going to be our first clip, is where you kind of run down some of the news of all the injuries going on. And
yeah,
it's kind of a wild time for WCW.
Yeah, this was... was this when Sting was climbing up the cage and he got his knee caught in the cage?
I think it's the same angle, but not the same night.
Oh, okay.
Because this was, he was ringside.
Got it. Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Well, you know, happened a long time ago. So, I guess we're going to hear it and relive the past right here on the show.
Yeah.
We welcome Bruce, our producer, who showed up looking dapper as usual. Bruce, how are you?
One of the worst days of my life, John.
You had a big big cash flow day today.
No cash flow today.
Okay. We have a very, very big breaking news story in the NWA, as usual. As you know, last week Lex Luger came an inch away from winning the world title from Ric Flair. Unfortunately for him, that didn't happen. But this week, Lex was at a TV taping, and he wrestled one of the Wild Samoans, Samu. And Samu is one of the most vicious wrestlers in the world. And what happened was Lex pinned him, got the 1-2-3 on him. Right after the match, he was attacked by Samu. And Lex is the owner of the U.S. Championship. Samu took the belt and started raking it and hitting him in the face with it. Busted Luger's face wide open. Luger's now in the hospital getting plastic surgery done. Because he was lacerated so severely, it messed up his pretty face. Now, I understand the NWA, if they have not fired Samu, I believe that's in the works. He may not be with the organization anymore due to this vicious attack. Now, Luger's in the hospital. I don't know how long he'll miss, but he will probably be out for a couple of weeks healing up. He is in the hospital right now. We'll try to get some more information possibly today from Dave Meltzer, who I gave the story to a few days ago. And Dave is checking up on his NWA sources, and we'll try to get an update on Lex Luger's condition and how long he'll be out for. Also, in last week's match, the tag team encounter between the Steiners and the Andersons, Ole Anderson was injured, a back injury, and I believe he'll be out for approximately 2 months. Now, another major blow for the NWA. Ole, of course, is one of the Four Horsemen, and now they're only down to two since they got rid of Sting, and Sting is going to be out for 6 months. Obviously, he'll never be back in the Horsemen because he hates the Horsemen for what they did, but Ole Anderson now out with an injury. Another injury from last week's show. Buzz Sawyer broke his hand during the match.
What's going on, John?
Well, they say wrestling is fake, right?
It's fake.
But regardless of the NWA has been known for their physical violence and contact inside the squared circle, and these guys go out there and mean it.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. You know, I mean, it seems like the rash of injuries. I've never seen anything like it. I mean,
well, the organization is definitely hurting right now with the two top stars, aside from Ric Flair. Obviously, Luger now injured with a malicious attack by Samu, the Wild Samoans, and Arn Anderson out. Sting is going to be out for at least 6 months. Buzz Sawyer is, from what I understand, is going to continue wrestling with the broken hand because he's just an animal, is the way it is.
Is that why when I came in today, I said you have the tights on today? You ready?
Yeah, that's right. I'm ready to go back in there. And also, if you did see the show last week, you saw that the skyscrapers, one of the skyscrapers, Dan Spivey, was not there. He's been fired by the NWA for missing a number of dates. The guy that was under the mask last week was, let me see if I got his name here. Of course, it was one of the guys who appeared in the AWA. It was Mike Enos, who was in the Destruction Crew in the AWA. He was under the mask, but now we don't know what's going to happen with the skyscrapers, whether they're going to scrape them or whether they're going to continue. But Sid Vicious, who was one of the original members of the skyscrapers as well, was out with a punctured lung, of course, caused by the Steiners as well. And he'll be back in action in about a month or so. But the NWA injury report is pretty much like the NFL injury report every week that you receive during the football season. But unfortunately, these guys are out there, and the violence and the physical contact that they have each and every time the NWA puts on a show. Even Cactus Jack Manson, you know, he's out there.
No, he's not hurt, is he?
No, he's not, but he's... from what I understand, I spoke to his dad before the program today to try to find out where he is. He is wrestling full-time at the NWA. He's wrestling 28 times in the next 30 days for the NWA. And the way he wrestles, that guy's out there every night taking bumps that are unbelievable. So hopefully Cactus Jack won't get hurt, and he'll be in town this week. We'll try to get a hold of him and see what's happening.
A lot of injuries.
Dude, everyone's getting injured over there. And it kind of makes me wonder, because you were... you know, a very smart fan. You were into what you were into. And you hear the people talk about it nowadays too. Is the work rate wrestling style just harder on the body than some of these other styles?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the physicality that was in the NWA at the time, they were always more, more believable, you know, trying to get that suspension of disbelief. They just had a harder working style than the other organizations, and the WWE and the WWF back then, it wasn't as physical as the NWA was promoting. So, you know, just to take away the Luger stuff and then Buzz Sawyer, they'd mentioned, we mentioned in that clip. And I don't know if Buzz ever returned because he had immediate problems there with management. And I believe he got fired either right around the time that he broke his hand or right after that, if my memory serves me correctly. Yeah. And, of course, Ole getting hurt. And you know, we didn't mention it yet, but Ole passed away, as everybody probably knows who listens to the show like this. Mm-hmm. So what a fascinating tribute and on the Jim Cornette show that I heard driving here to Florida from Tennessee yesterday. And I listened to the whole show, and what stories that Cornette had about Ole. So I certainly recommend that if fans really want to know about this guy.
And I think, yeah, Cornette handles those things so well, because he also even acknowledged, like, yeah, we didn't get along a lot. Like, you know, but yeah, you can also look back on it. And that's what we do here. We look back on it and you have a whole different lens on it. And you go, you know what? When it's all said and done, maybe I lost my cool a few times and didn't need to. Maybe he did, but there was a lot of good out of that, you know?
When someone passes, you know, that's always sad. And Ole wasn't a liked guy. And Ole was direct and to the point. And Ole was, you know, he was gruff. And he you know, a lot of people didn't like him. You know, and I never personally had any interaction with him. He just didn't believe in the sheets, obviously, or radio shows like mine. So I never had the opportunity to even interview him. He just wasn't approachable. And I always kept my distance from him.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Was all the times you were backstage at stuff, you had to have seen him in the locker room at least once or twice.
Yeah, absolutely. But I stayed away from him.
Yeah.
Huh? And even Flair.
Wasn't even like a handshake or nothing. It was just like,
No. I just never even approached him for a hello or a shake of hand, because I know his personality. I know what he was. I know what he did to the boys. I know the way he was straight and to the point. And, you know, I wasn't going there. I mean, even at that time, I was having some problems with Flair. He threw me out of the dressing room one time in Philly because he said, you know, you guys are exposing the business.
Yeah.
And then he apologized to me at my convention in 91. He was like, I remember throwing him out. And, you know, John's a good guy. And he goes, the business has changed so much. Because the business was. We were in a period right now where shows like mine were non-existent for the most part. And a lot of people thought that, a show like mine, we were exposing the business and ruining the wrestling business. So I stayed clear for some of those guys. So I got thrown out of more locker rooms in the early days, and I did later on.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I wonder at what point did they? Because we also know that some of these guys were actively talking to the sheets. They were like, so it's funny that they're like, you're exposing the business. Meanwhile, Ric Flair's on the phone with Meltzer saying, "Hey, this is what's going on." Who's the one exposing
never acknowledged
the business?
It though? It was not not public knowledge.
Right. But at the same time, we know it. So it was almost like, hey, get out of here. Only I can expose the business. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you guys are just reporting what they were telling you. A lot of people. Yeah. So his sources were very deep within the organization. And there were guys that just wouldn't participate or talk to him. But there are others that you'd be surprised that would.
Yeah. I was always surprised at how much the boys disliked the you and the Meltzers and the Wade saying that all you guys do is reporting what you're hearing from the inside because you're not inside. You know what I mean? Like, your inside knowledge is from the boys. Like,
we were inside the bubble, but we weren't really inside the inside. We were just in the bubble, as they call it today, the bubble.
The bubble. All right. Let's see. A couple other things that were going on in March. Bruno Sammartino is about to make a big appearance in New York, which we're going to cover a little bit later. Cooney's recently changed their name to Instant Replay. I feel like that you did a lot with him, did you not?
I did do a lot with Cooney's. Yeah, we had an advertising deal, some live remotes, and you know, we just couldn't draw people at the time. You know, you'd get the same 15 to 20 people that would show up at these promotions, but it was always a hustle to try to get new advertisers and new sponsors to do events at.
That's interesting because the way you're also talking about it, they're trying to bring in a bunch of names. You were talking about baseball guys. It sounded like some hockey guys. It sounded like wrestling.
Yeah.
Seemed like it would be a really dope sports bar.
This Cooney's was owned by Jerry Cooney, who was a boxer, big name boxer at the time.
Oh, wow. Huh. I wonder if it's still around in any iteration, you know?
I think he's still alive. I don't think he's dead. I'm not really sure.
Not him, the place.
No, that place is long gone. Kim, this is 30 years ago, man.
Yeah, I'm saying it's probably not the same owner, but I wonder if it got sold off enough if there's still a sports bar in that corner, you know?
I doubt it.
That's all. No, maybe not. Especially New York right now.
Well, actually, I'm getting different types of light in here because we're in a loft, this place.
Yeah.
So the sun is passing through, so... It might be colorful for everybody out there watching this on YouTube to see me get brighter white and then a little darker light.
Yeah, it's
you see it, right?
Yeah, I see it. Yeah, it's going from like kind of flat to lit up. Yeah, I do like Bruce said it was the worst day of his life. Did he lose a bet on a game or something?
Yeah, I think Bruce was a gambler. Bruce placed some wages every now and then.
Yeah,
he wasn't happy that day.
No,
he wasn't happy most days, actually. He was always in a mood.
So he gambled a lot, but he wasn't great at it.
You know, the odds are you're going to lose anyway.
Yeah, that's why you bet. Let's see real quick. I had this for a clip, but I realized it was too long for actually just one question. So I was just going to ask the question instead. You're talking about the build to WrestleMania 6, which is going to be Hogan and Warrior. You talk about the colossal connection, which is Andre and was it Fuji and someone else?
You're asking me?
Yeah, I don't remember the other guy in the colossal connection, but it was basically Andre the Giant.
Andre was the leader of the colossal.
It was Haku. Right? Yeah, it was Andre and Haku with Bobby Heenan.
Yeah.
So Andre had just collapsed in an airport.
He just what?
Do you recall that? He had just collapsed in an airport in this. You were talking about how he had, like, he, I don't know if he fainted or what, but he collapsed. And so you guys think that his health is deteriorating and he might be retiring within the next year.
Yeah, it was at that point with him where, you know, obviously his health was deteriorating. He was having these episodes. He was having a very difficult time walking. He couldn't even work. You know, he had to prop himself up in the ring, and he was long overdue for retirement at this point.
Yeah.
Did you hear?
Do you remember hearing stories of him collapsing or just like not like even in his day to day stuff as a thing? Was that just getting more and more, or was this kind of a one off?
It was just getting more frequent that he was struggling in so many different ways physically that it was definitely time for him to go. And I believe during this time period, this was not yet the time where he left WWF. And then when he did that, Herb Abrams, he appeared on one Herb Abrams TV taping, and then Vince brought him back, and that and after Vince brought him back, that was the end.
Yeah, forget it. I like Andre's stories, but this was one of those ones you just hear right away and you go, oh shoot, like this is not great. And I remember even in that, they talked about it in the Andre documentary that was on HBO when he was filming Princess Bride, and they needed to put the woman who played Buttercup in a like a harness thing so it was easier on his back to hold her up, and I guess everyone on set was kind of like, oh
yeah,
he's not doing great, like if he can't hold up a young woman. And I mean, and think about the picture we all know where he's holding up like three on each side.
I know,
you know what I mean?
that famous George Napolitano photo.
Let's see, you guys run down WrestleMania, but the big thing, the big interview you have here is you brought in the hottest manager in wrestling today in 1990, Diamond Dallas Page. And as you kept alluding to the hottest manager, I was like, who's he got on? And then you said DDP, and I was like, what?
I was putting him over.
I mean, I'm sure he was doing great stuff. Right.
Yeah, but he was. He was a hot man in the AWA, and you know, he started late in life to get into the business, and he made an impact pretty you know, immediately just because of how great he was and the personality, the promo skills, and so it was. This was the first appearance of DDP on Pro Wrestling Spotlight.
This is Cactus Jack Manson reminding you that you'd better listen to the Pro Wrestling Spotlight each week with John Anthony on 1440 WNYG Babylon, or you might face the consequences.
We do have a special guest lined up with us right now at the Pro Wrestling Spotlight here at WNYG in Babylon, New York. We have one of the top wrestling managers in the business with us, Diamond Dallas Page, direct from Florida, and also on the line with Don Liable, one of the top wrestling reporters. Gentlemen, how you doing?
Very good, John.
How you doing, brother? If I was doing any better, I'd have to be twins just to handle it. You know, I'm down here in sunny southwest Florida. Today, I don't know what the weather was like up there, but it was 83, not a cloud in the sky, brother. No humidity, hanging out with three or four of the Diamond Dolls. So how do you think I'm doing, brother?
Well, you must be doing great, because every time I've ever seen you, Diamond Dallas, you have beautiful women surrounding you all the time.
You got a keen eye for the obvious.
I look at the women, you know, but you got all tens there.
12. They're off the Richter scale, brother.
So what's happening down in Florida? Don, I know you had a question or two for Diamond Dallas. Go right ahead.
Well, John, I just wanted to say that, you know, looking over the roster of people involved in professional wrestling today, since 1988, I can't think of another manager that has gotten so much publicity and has taken so many veterans under his wing so fast. We've seen Diamond Dallas with the Bad Company. He took Pat Tanaka and Paul Diamond to the AWA Tag Team Championship. He had Medusa Michelli, who was the AWA Women's Champion. Then he had had Colonel DeBeers and, of course, the Diamond Dolls. And since his departure from the AWA, the show seems a bit bland.
Boring.
Lacking is the key word there. Seriously lacking.
I agree.
But it wasn't up to my standards right now, Donnie. I've been down here in professional wrestling from Florida, where the whole show is pretty much the Diamond Dallas Page show. I'm just waiting off in the wings right now. I've taken a guy that was called Big Steel Man at the time and brought him right to the Professional Wrestling Federation champion. And since then, he has gone on, changed his name, changed his style, his profile, if you will, and is now Tugboat Tommy up there in the World Wrestling Federation. I expect some big things from him. He's a big man. I had him for a little bit of time there, and then I stepped back and kicked back a little bit and started hosting Professional Wrestling from Florida. But I've been training real hard on top of managing a few guys that you're going to see coming out real soon. I myself am up to about 257 pounds and 6'5", twisted steel and sex appeal. And I'm looking for a tag team partner right now. One of the guys that I'm training right now that we might be coming out as a Diamond Stud, which will be another niche to the Diamond Exchange.
You know, John, I was going to say, you beat me to it. The Professional Wrestling Federation in Florida seems to be centering around Diamond Dallas, and it seemed a bit quiet lately, and that's unusual with Diamond Dallas around. It seems like something was brewing, and I did hear that not only is he managing, but he's also going to be looking to get into the tag team competition. Dallas, any truth that perhaps we might be seeing you in the Atlanta area?
Well, there's been a little bit of talk. There's a little bit of talk about there, a little bit of talk about New York. I'm going to wait for the right deal. Both of those are, the top of the line, if you will, and I tell you, when you talk about the NWA, man, I tell you, it's been getting so physical there that I understand that Stevie Wonder and Ronnie Millsap have bought tickets just to hear the slams, the jams, and the body slams. It's quite physical there, and the WWF, it speaks for itself, you know?
Well, also, anywhere that Diamond Dallas Page appears, I'm sure all hell is breaking loose down in Florida now, and fans up in this area in the New York market would love to see a Diamond Dallas Page, and especially some of the women that you hang around up here in the New York area.
A couple of them are transplants from the great state of New Jersey, the Jersey Shore area, where I was born and bred and raised there, and then I had to get to Florida, baby, because that weather stinks, man. I had to get down where it was, you know, I could keep that tan, you know, be my main man, a man with a plan. Always working on the total tan. You know what I'm saying?
And more bikinis down there as well.
Oh, a meeny bikini. As a matter of fact, at my nightclub down in Southwest Florida, Norma Jean's Dance Club, we have the Wild Wet T-shirt contest tonight, and a couple of dolls will be in that, so you know the house will be rocking tonight.
Hey, maybe someday we could do a remote from down there in Florida.
I'd love it. We'd be rocking it.
Don't forget
we
me,
do a
John.
Couple remotes with a couple different radio stations, but this one would definitely set the wrestling world on fire. I just got back off the road. I was on the road with Skid Row, another Jersey-based band. I was like hanging out with the Beatles, and now that Diamond Dallas Page has been, you know, hanging out with Bon Jovi, Motley Crue, Bullet Boys, Bonham just played at my club the other night, Skid Row. I am becoming not just a wrestling mentor, but a rock mentor as well, and I've now been dubbed by Snake from Skid Row the rock and wrestling mentor. In the ring, out of the ring, in the playground, in the bars, it don't matter. We are partying hardy.
Well, we just hope to have you up here in this area sometime soon to get some excitement up here, and I know you'd add a lot if you ever negotiated with the Atlanta-based company, the NWA, or the WWF. You'd add a lot to both organizations, either one that you choose down the road if you decide to do that. Diamond Dallas Page, you know, it's been a pleasure having you for this time here at the Pro Wrestling Spotlight.
Well, it's always a pleasure, baby. Like I said before, you got a keen eye for the obvious. I gotta go right now. Ladies, I'll be right there. Hold on, wait, chill out that...
I'll be there myself. I'm flying down in an hour.
I gotta go. See ya.
Take care, guys.
John, how do you follow a voice like that?
Well, let's get some of the women that he hangs around with, and that's a good way to follow it up.
Mm.
That's what I say.
Mm.
Boy, what was going on with me back 34 years ago? I was a horn dog.
You were, dude. Every time you had him on, and what was it? Some of the other ones was always like, and the ladies. Like, you'd always... Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, even later on, I don't have the clip, but but I do mention it in my notes that you're trying to bring in a sales rep, and you're all like, any young women would be happily brought up. But Donnie, too, as soon as you're all like, I'm going to do this, and you just hear Donnie in the background, yeah. Don't forget me, John. Like,
yeah.
I want to come out.
Yeah, it was that was an interesting time. And you think about it, 34 years ago, there, WNYG and DDP's first appearance, and He was really about to make an impact, a big time impact in the business, and still, you know, for decades later, he did. Yeah. He, what a career this guy's had,
and what an impact on the people. Like, I mean, just fast forward after his career, everything he's done with the TDPY and all of that.
Oh my
just
God!
Just getting a lot of these guys healthy again, adding years and years to their life. You know,
yeah, and helping Jake Roberts, you know, come out of that abyss that Jake was in, and you know, having Jake live with him, and you know, try to help Mick Foley with DDP yoga, and all the lives that he really impacted by getting people healthy by using that program that he developed and started, and he's still out there. What an entrepreneur this guy has been throughout his career. What an entrepreneur. What a story.
And what a cool, like, how cool is it too? Like, I mean, we talk about how cool the CAC is, Cauliflower Alley Club, and how they give back to the boys, as it were. His whole business model is I'm going to fix all my friends that are broken and yeah. hopefully make a living in the way. So that way I can continue to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just awesome. So it's a good dude. And it was a funny clip. I love the way he was. There's no way he wasn't a huge fan of Muhammad Ali, the way he was trying to rhyme everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, you guys, I mean, at the time too, like, valets are not what the women wrestler are today. Like, if you watch women's wrestling today and all you have to say about him is, I like the way she looks, then you're not watching the wrestling, right?
Yeah.
But you're talking about valets who were there as literal, quote, arm candy at the time, eye candy, whatever. Like, so the idea that you guys would make little quips isn't, you know, totally out of
this
pocket.
This was really interesting to listen to too, because you know, the promo, the way the interview was, it was all kayfabe. It wasn't anything other than you know, just he was doing a wrestling promo and yeah. we're playing along with it. And this was the simple days of Pro Wrestling Spotlight. This was that era at WNYG, less than a year that we'd been on the air. It was never really easy in the beginning to get really good guests. It was like the Power Twins, yes. You know, Sonny Blaze was in the studio. Mark Tendler was there. You know, the Vialo, the Giants, the Jack, the Giant Starkers, all of these types of yeah. individuals. But the big name guests were kind of few and far between until we really started to get our mojo down. And ironically, this was kind of, I believe this was the month that Superstar Billy Graham came on Pro Wrestling Spotlight on NYG and talked about the steroid stuff. So this is where it kind of changed a little bit. And these were my final months at NYG before switching over to WGBB.
Yeah. I mean, he was so kayfabe that when he caught your cue that we're wrapping this up, he pretended yeah. somebody was in the room calling for him.
Yes, it was good.
What's that, ladies?
It was a good synergy.
Yeah, it was cool. It was great. And this is, we do have a clip coming up too, where, your advertising for the Billy Graham interview, like, you knew what you had and you were like, you were advertising, you guys got to listen to this. So I have that because I couldn't believe the little clip.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. That was, I knew it was going to be impactful. I knew the things that he told me that was game changing back then. Cause he had only done one interview before, to talk about that stuff. And that was with, LA. There was a local, TV evening news magazine show in Los Angeles, and he did that, and it didn't get widely covered. Meltzer wrote about it, but when he came on my show and did that disclosure, that was when things really changed.
Shifted everything. Did it make things easier or harder for you to do your show?
It was, for me, I was kind of, where are we going? Like, what's... This is big. This is news. This is big stuff. This ain't wrestling angle. This is about life. This is about what he put himself through for decades with yeah. the steroid use. And this was right, the precursor, because this was right around the time where the feds were zeroing in on George Zaharian.
Yeah.
And that arrest was happening. And Billy knew it was imminent, because Billy's the guy that tipped me off to all of that stuff. Yeah. When I broke the arrest, the story about the trial of Zaharian, it was really Billy Graham tipping me off.
Yeah. And then Bruno got involved at some point, but that was after you brought him in, right? Like, you Or did he call you too after Billy and was all like, hey, I want to tell you more?
Bruno?
Yeah, because didn't he come in around this time too?
Bruno, I believe he might have appeared a week or two after the Billy Graham interview. Because, Bruno was just disgusted with the business. And, you know, he'd been a guest on the show probably 3-4 times. But after the Graham interview, then it really just opened up.
Did he listen to the Graham interview and want to weigh in?
I don't know. I don't recall. He might have heard it. I don't know. You know, I really don't remember. Yeah. But I know a lot of ears were starting to ring in Connecticut in Titan Towers.
Yeah. Now, we know long term that the beginning of all that really burnt you out as far as just having to cover so much stuff that was just hard to stomach while you're trying to enjoy a fun wrestling show. But in that moment when that was about to launch, was there like an excitement that things were going to shift or change, or was
I was hoping that, you know, the audience would grow, but I was in a limited, you know, I was in a, with a station that had no signal, you know, there, it's a station that, you know, it powered down in the evening to 10 watts.
To save electricity.
I was lucky Joey from North Babylon and George from Lindenhurst could hear the freaking show.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Let's get into a couple of callers. I got a few things that are coming up in a couple of these clips that I'm excited to ask you about. This one is Vinny, and I think we have like 2 callers on this one.
Okay.
Anyone who would like to stop in and get a free sandwich. The next call is calling in. If you're interested, our producer, Bruce, will ask you if you'd like a free sandwich courtesy of the Holtzville Deli. And Bruce, the next callers that call in, also ask them if they'd like a free sandwich from the Holtzville Deli and Grill. Write their names down, and we'll give them to them over there. Of course, Bruce, they're in Holtzville. They're at exit 62 off the LAE. Come, you know, you can stop down there yourself and get a free sandwich. We have names for the next callers coming in. That would help. Okay, 661-1440 is the number to call. We have that's the first call we should take. Okay, Vinny from West Babylon, line number 2.
Hi, John.
How you doing, Vinny?
Good, John. How's everything?
Pretty good.
John, what's done with Nitron? I haven't seen a thing. I heard he was going to fill in last week as one of the skyscrapers, and of course, he didn't happen.
Well, he's not very astute as a wrestler, from what I understand. I'm sure that if he had any real true wrestling talents, he would have been in the ring. But they got Mike Enos, who was with the Destruction Crew, and of course, he got the pinfall done on him. But I don't know what's going to be happening with Nitro. And I understand the other monster giant that they have, this El Gigante, is now back in training, and you might see him debut in May with the NWA. Another big, big, tall monster.
Right. Okay. And a couple of WWF things, if I could. Do you know why Piper's pulling out of March 19th MSG show? They say contractual reasons. That's all they announced. Is he having a problem, or maybe wants to...
Well, I understand from things that I've been hearing is that Piper's not really happy with the WWF at this point. Obviously, the money is great over there, you know, Roddy Piper's now really relegated to, like, middle-of-the-card spots.
Right.
And I'm sure he's not very happy with that situation. Hopefully, he could work something out. But, you know, I'd love to see Piper's Pit back again. I'd like to see him the way he was years ago when he caused havoc in the WWF.
That's true.
But I'd really like to see if Piper ever decides to bolt the WWF for whatever reason.
To go
to the NWA. Because they certainly need as many superstars as they can get right now.
Right. And Rude Snooker, you think it's about time that they switched the...
Who knows what's going to happen?
Because I think Barbarian's going to go with Bobby the Brain, and think he might also turn Rude loose and take Snooker with him?
That's a strong possibility. I don't know for sure if that'll happen or not.
Okay. And did you happen to see us, Vince and Jesse kind of lost it when Buddy Rose was...
Oh, man, I lost it when I seen that guy yesterday.
I don't know who was laughing in the background. I don't know who lost
it. I could tell. I think it was Vince. I could tell his laugh. He couldn't even catch his breath. And Buddy Rose was fired after that match.
He was fired.
Yes. See, they took him on, you know, because Buddy Rose did have some sort of a name with the WWF years ago. And he was always a colorful performer, but he ballooned up, I guess. guess, over to 400. He got to be near the 400-pound mark. And Vince did not know he looked this way. And after he appeared, it was like, hey, here's your walking papers. We don't really need you around here.
He kind of looked like the Pittsburgh Pirates mascot, if you ever saw him.
Yeah, definitely.
And one other quick thing. Mr. Perfect, I'm hearing, been getting defeated by, he has been pinned by Hogan.
Yes, he has been pinned by Hogan.
But they still will call him Mr. Perfect as long as he's in the New York area.
I'm pretty sure. You know, other things, like I said, I've heard rumors that Terry Taylor, Red Rooster, and Mr. Perfect might be coming into the NWA. Their contracts are up in July. I know Terry Taylor for sure would like to make the move. Mr. Perfect, of course, the money's so great in the WWF, I don't know what would happen with him. But those are the two hottest rumors I've heard this week.
Okay, John, I know you got other calls coming in. So
all right.
I'll talk to you next week, John.
Okay, thank you, Vinny.
Thanks, John. Bye-bye.
Vinny from West Babylon.
You were giving away sandwiches.
I know. I was laughing. The Holtzville Deli. And that was so far away from where the station was. Because what I used to do to get leads, there was these local little newspapers like the Penny Saver. And I'd be clipping, you know, ads, calling people up blindly, cold calling and trying to get. And then you hope that you'd talk to a wrestling fan. And that would open the door, and I'd go in there and some of these little packages to advertise on the show, but the giving away sandwiches, and someone's going to go to Holtzville, which is probably 30 to 45 minutes east of West Babylon, where we were broadcasting from. It wasn't going to happen. So usually it would be, we're on for a few weeks, and it's like, hey, not one person has mentioned this, and that's the end of that.
I thought it was great, because you told them. You reminded them as callers are coming in, hey, make sure you're offering them that sandwich.
Yeah, get that sandwich. Get that coupon for that sandwich. You know, it was the life of a host of a brokered radio show.
Yeah. Buddy Rose?
Yeah, that big, he was a big tub of lard when he came back. And I remember Vince just cracking up and laughing on the and I think it was like someone posted that up on X. There was a little clip, ironically, that was just over a few days ago. He was so big, so fat, and McMahon hated that look.
Yeah.
You know, he liked that muscularity, and Buddy Rose didn't have it, and he got his walking papers, and I think Vince kept that match on TV just to embarrass the guy.
Well, I mean, as soon as he comes out, Vince is laughing. So Vince probably didn't see him in the back. Was Buddy Rose, was he in shape at any point in time in his career? Or was he always a big
guy? Yeah, absolutely. And he was a good worker. And he was still a good worker. He was great at taking bumps.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, he had a bit of a run. He was very popular at one time.
Yeah. I just thought it was funny, just the idea that even kind of happened.
I guess he wasn't on Dr. George Saharian's, medical program. He wasn't taking the right type of candy at the time.
Yeah. Let's see. I do like in this, at some point you start saying that you were thinking that Warrior was going to win the main event in Mania 6, but you're starting to think it might be Hogan, which I thought was interesting. You're starting to sway.
I was.
Yeah. Oh, let's see. I got a couple more callers in this one. I believe this is where we have the return of George from Lindenhurst.
Yes!
Hi, this is Brian Bryan. You're listening to the Pro Wrestling Spotlight with John Anthony on 1440 WNYG.
Back with the Pro Wrestling Spotlight, and interesting enough, that last promo, Flying Brian Pillman, I met a friend of his last night, very close friends, former teammate, Boomer Esiason, and Boomer was at the Bel Air Cafe, Sunrise Highway in West Islip, and this kind of ties in with Bruno Sammartino. And how does it tie in with Bruno Sammartino? Well, this is the scoop. Bruno Sammartino is going to be appearing at the Bel Air Cafe and the Bel Air Cafe in West Islip. The owner over there, Sal DiCarlo, is opening up in the back of the Bel Air Cafe, one of the largest sports bars on the East Coast. There's going to be a full batting range basketball court. And his grand opening weekend is going to be March 30th and 31st. And Bruno Sammartino will be appearing at this illustrious new sports complex located at the Bel Air Cafe Let's take a call, George from Lindenhurst. George, you're on the air.
John Anthony, I got to ask you a question.
Go right ahead, George.
Who's Black Bart? I don't even know that guy.
I don't know him either. Have you seen him on TV yet?
No, I don't think so.
He's coming into the WWF. I don't know who he is, but we'll find out for you.
Okay, I also got another question.
Go ahead.
Do you know the match Dino Bravo against Hogan? Who do you think could win that, Hogan?
Oh, of course. I don't think Dino Bravo stands a chance with the Hulkster. That's next Saturday on TV, right?
Uh-huh. Is the Earthquake an interfere?
I believe he probably will be at ringside and look for him to interfere on that one.
I think he's gonna...
Matter of fact, I think this was taped. Matter of fact, it was taped. Now my memory is serving me correct here. In that match, I know Hogan does defeat Bravo, and Earthquake runs in, and then Warrior is going to run in to try to help Hulk, and they get into another shoving match. That's what's going to happen next week.
That's what they did on the main event. Thank
and they're going to do the same thing. Take care, George.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Steve from Comac, you're next at the Pro Wrestling Spotlight.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good, and you've won the annual.
All right. Thanks a
lot. Do you subscribe to Matt Watch?
No, I don't.
Well, after you read this annual,
sure, I will.
It's a great publication.
I remember when you had him on the show a couple weeks ago, he was talking about it, and I meant to send away for a copy, but I never did.
Well, you'll enjoy this annual for sure.
John, with the deli, can you get a Buzzsaw or jam sandwich with
him? Yeah, right. Yeah, we'll see if we could put that on his menu there. He does have sandwiches like the Meadowlands, Shea Stadium, Wrigley Field. He's got, he definitely has a wide variety of sandwiches to choose from over at Holtzville Deli and Grill, and some great sandwiches. There's basically a whole sports atmosphere in the deli as well.
I missed the first couple minutes of the show. Now, what exactly happened with Luger?
Luger was in a TV match this past week against Samu of the Wild Samoans, and Luger got the pinfall 1-2-3 on him. As Luger was leaving the ring, he was attacked by Samu, and this might have had something to do with it. The Samoans, their contracts were not renewed, and I guess Samu took it out on Luger, took the belt, smashed it in his face, raked it across his face, and opened up Luger's face. Luger's in the hospital, has a corrective plastic surgery being done. I understand he has at least 25 stitches were taken, and he'll be out for a couple of weeks.
Okay, and what's the word with Spivey?
Spivey's out. He's gone, yes.
And he... So what's going to happen now when...
I have no idea what's going to happen. I think Vicious is going to come back pretty much as a good guy.
Yeah.
That's what I hear. Look for the skyscrapers to be no more, I feel. And that's unfortunate because Spivey and Vicious were great.
They were a great team together.
Yeah, everyone was saying, even the Road Warriors on TV this weekend saying they were supposed to be team in the 90s, and now they're not even around anymore, so.
Mm-hmm. And where's Broadway been the last couple weeks?
Okay, Broadway is he works a few different jobs, and he's been working at his other job, can't get out here. Pretty much anymore as far as for the entire show. I know he'll be back on the show upcoming soon, and we have some big news about Broadway Sonny Blaze. Anyhow, we'll be the first to announce here that he will be wrestling for the World Wrestling Federation April 3rd and 4th, Albany TV tape, so he'll be up there.
Look forward to that. Is Paul Lee going to go there as an announcer?
There's so many damn speculations about Paul Lee Dangerously. We don't know what's happening.
I think rumors were
this week. Say what?
I think he should team up with Diamond Dallas.
That would be a good pairing up. But rumors were this week that Paul Lee's left the ICW.
Yeah?
Over a big dispute.
He doesn't seem to stay anywhere that long.
Well, he's a volatile personality. You can't really predict what's going to happen next with Paulie Dangerously. He leaves organizations pretty quickly.
All righty, John. Thanks a lot.
Take care, Steve.
Bye-bye.
What memory is that? Yeah. From Sonny Blaze getting his shot in the WWF to the always great to hear George from Lindenhurst. And the Bel Air Cafe that was opening up, Casey Coogan's was the name of that sports place, and the owner Sal DiCarlo, I had known him for several years actually, and he had a nightclub first called Key Largo, which was kind of a place where national acts would participate, but he couldn't get a liquor license. There was a lot of demonstrations, and I helped the guy out back in the day, and he remembered me. And when he was opening up Bel Air Cafe and then the sports bar, I was hired by him to run his promotions and be his PR person. So I booked the talent. I booked Bruno in there. I booked Eddie Krampel in there from the New York Mets. I booked Bobby Nystrom, who was a big star with the New York Islanders, and Sean Landetto, who was a member of the New York Jets. And I also had a night where I brought four New York Mets in there. Yeah, so yeah, I was getting paid good money. I was getting paid, I think it was $2,500 a month at the time, to do all the promotions there at Casey Coogan's.
Dang, wow. You've always had that tie into Mets, which I think is always cool.
Hey, orange and blue, man. It's my blood. I bleed orange and blue.
Yeah, the other thing there was that right before you went to the ad break that I played you coming back from is you had mentioned that you had met Flyin' Brian's friend, but you called him Boom Boom. You couldn't remember his name. Like, what was his name? Boom Boom?
Boomer Esiason.
When you came back, that's when you knew it was Boomer Esiason, because Bruce, I'm sure, told you. Did you?
And he's a big personality. Remember? Oh, yeah. Yeah, vaguely remember the Boomer Esiason meeting. But Boomer is one of the morning radio co-hosts for WFAN in the New York market. He's a legend, legendary yeah. football player, and co-host of the morning drive show on WFAN in New York to this day.
Oh, yeah. No, I was pretty impressed when I heard that, too, because it was funny when you said it. You're like, Boom Boom? Who, Boom Boom? I was like, he's not talking about. And then you're like, oh, Boomer Esiason? I was like, he is. Like, what?
I've crossed paths with a lot of people.
Always. And I like that you met Flyin' Brian's friend, Boomer Esiason. It wasn't that you met this massive...
Boomer Esiason's acquaintance, Brian Pillman. It was the other yes. way around. It was
yeah, Brian's exactly. friend, you're all like... Yeah. So, just good stuff. I like that. Let me see. Let's play another one here. I got a few of them because... The other thing I was noticing was how fun your ad breaks were. The stars you had saying stuff. That's why I've been keeping them in here, because they've been the people you got to do it was really cool. This one is a couple of them squished together. It's your commercial for the coming up Billy Graham interview, and then there's a little snippet of you and Donnie at the end of it, because it's, I mean, I think all in all it's like 4 minutes. You know,
that's fine.
But yeah, this was I think you guys are talking about cactus for a minute, too, so.
Good stuff.
...vegetarians at 585-8159. That's 585-8159.
1440 WNYG Babylon, your community-minded station.
Hey, don't touch that dial. This is Cactus Jack painting a portrait of pain on the Wrestling Spotlight with John Anthony.
Wrestling fans, former pro wrestler John Anthony here with another edition of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight, heard each and every Sunday right here at 1440 WNYG in Babylon, New York. Exciting show lined up for you today as usual. We have, of course, that interview with Cactus Jack, who is now wreaking havoc in the NWA. Cactus Jack interview will be played at the 5:30 mark or somewhere in that vicinity. We're also expecting to get on the line today with Chris Cruz, NWA announcer, and we'll check out Chris Cruz and see what he has to say about the recent developments in the NWA.
This is Paul E. Dangerously, and I personally am taping, therefore you obviously are listening to the Wrestling Spotlight on 1440 WNYG.
Twelve years ago, he was professional wrestling's world's heavyweight champion and the idol of millions. Today, superstar Billy Graham is an invalid, a victim of anabolic steroid abuse. This is John Anthony. Join me this Sunday at 5 p.m. on WNYG's Pro Wrestling Spotlight and hear Billy Graham's own story. one that affects all athletes competing today.
This is a story of life and death and health. It's not even, it's not so much a story of pro wrestling. It goes way beyond wrestling, football, or any other sport. It's an issue of health.
Every high school or college athlete and every parent with a child involved in collegiate sports are urged to listen to Billy Graham's story. That's this Sunday at 5 p.m. on the Pro Wrestling Spotlight, heard exclusively right here on 1440 WNYG.
Baby, this is Captain Lou Albano. You're listening to the hottest sports talk show in radio, the Pro Wrestling Sports Spotlight with John Anthony on 1440 WNYG. Woo! So good!
You know, John, another match on the pay-per-view last week that caught my eye was Cactus Jack going against Norman. I'll tell you, every time I see Jack in the ring, I want to close my eyes because I'm afraid that the man is going to hurt himself. He is incredible at his body. He's like the human Gumby.
Yes, did you see yesterday, or was it on the Pow Hour the other night, Jack threw his opponent, you know where the guard railing is?
Right.
Around the ring, threw his opponent over the guard railing, and then went on the ring apron and elbowed him. He leaped over the guard railing from the ring apron and elbowed this guy. It was one of the most unbelievable things I've seen. What I did is I called his home earlier today on Long Island, and he's wrestling 28 dates in the next 30 days for the NWA, and I said, "Oof!" I said, "You gotta be careful, because the way Cactus Jack is in that ring, taking the falls that he does, and has more has no sense of pain whatsoever. He's out there every single night. Unbelievable, Cactus Jack Manson. Unbelievable the way he performs in that ring."
And you know, John, even when the very first match of the night with Kevin Sullivan teaming up with Buzz Sawyer. I tell you, Buzz Sawyer borderlines on, they call Norman a lunatic. Well,
Sawyer's a mad dog. He's a rabid dog.
He's incredible. And I was under the impression that he did have an injury.
He broke his hand.
And I'll tell you, I remembered seeing him hit the missing on a punch, and he hit the ring post early on in the match.
Yes, he did. That's what happened, yeah.
That's incredible. So we have the injured reserve list. There is speculation that Arn Anderson will be out for a length
couple
of time.
Months, yeah, a couple months with a bad back, and that happened, I believe, one of the Steiners when he got clotheslined. That's how that happened. And the Steiners have been known to put guys out, including a guy that hopefully is coming back in another month, Sid Vicious.
That was really entertaining to hear all that stuff combined into one clip.
I was having fun with this one, and I think I'll do more of that as we go. Some of these little super clips of a few just...
Yeah, I like it.
Highlight things. I mean, Captain Lou Albano. Hey, baby! Yeah. Like Captain Lou, it's not a surprise to me that Captain Lou and Mikey B were got along so well.
Mickey
B. They kind of mirrored each other. Mickey B. They kind of mirrored each other's energy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a lot there. I mean, the NYG, the promo for Billy Graham, let's get to that. That was not just a promo on my show, but the station put it in like regular rotation to try to attract listeners who, you know, the couple hundred that listen to NYG anyway. but yeah, that was big stuff there. With that promo about the Billy Graham interview, and then hearing the Cactus stuff. I mean, you know, back then, just putting his body on the line every single day. And then hearing those promos, always, the show was so much fun back then.
Hearing him try to figure out too, Cactus, that's why I like these early Cactus clips, because he's talking like Mick. He's not talking like Cactus. And then as he grows into Cactus, at the end of your show, I should say, when he really becomes Cactus Jack wanted dead, he starts to sound like Mankind. He starts screeching a lot, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that's probably one of the most fascinating things in throughout the history of Pro Wrestling Spotlight was the evolution of Mick Foley and Cactus Jack Manson. Segueing to Cactus Jack and seeing the development. And that's why the show was so critical to him, because he'd come on and practice his muscle memory. As I say time and time again, when I bring it up, he had the open mic, he could do whatever he wanted. And it was a good way for him to practice his promo skills.
Yeah, it was awesome. I thought the music you had laid under the Billy Graham thing was just kind of funny. It sounded...
I was going to bring that up, too.
Go ahead.
It was horrible for that. It was the only thing I could find on, because we had... you know, we had record albums that were like just themes and little music beds, and
yeah,
and I couldn't find anything that was appropriate. And then I heard that, and I was like, "All right, this will have to do." But listen to it now, I'm like, "That's so cheesy," and that doesn't even fit the content matter of what the promo was.
It was very after school special kind of a vibe to it. It was really. It was weird. That's why I couldn't help but laugh when I was listening to it, because I was all like, "Oh, you're doing this thing, and you've got this tone, and then you have this cheesy '90s
cheesy
emotional music."
Horrible, man. Yeah. What was the budget we had to work with over there? Zero.
Yeah. But then Cactus versus Norman Lunatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was crazy, because this was a time where every time you saw Cactus, you'd be like, "It was the craziest thing I'd ever seen." Every time you saw him, it was something else.
Every time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was like week after week, it was, and year after year, it was just like more intense, crazier. His skills were just incredible. And what a legacy this guy has had.
Yeah. Before we get into the Cactus interview, which I've got a chunk off the top of the Cactus interview, but the longer version of it is up for Patreons, obviously. But you had him for about 15 minutes, so I don't want to play the whole 15 minutes. This is about five or six. But before I get right into that, I forgot to mention earlier that caller called in and asked about Nitron, and you said he was not a good wrestler. And when I look up who Nitron was, it was a guy named Tyler Mayne.
Oh, it was Tyler Mayne. It wasn't Fred Ottman. Okay.
That's what it's telling me here, that Tyler Mayne wrestled as Skywalker Nitron. Oh, so maybe it was a different guy, because this guy went on to become Sabretooth in X-Men.
Yeah, because I think we were referring to Fred Ottman, who was Tugboat.
Really?
Unless I'm Fred wrong. Ottman was
Let me see, because I don't remember. I remember Nitron being this big, jacked guy. Mm-hmm.
Hey, listen, 34 years ago, man.
Rename Shawn Michaels. Yep.
I'm not Mr. Perfect.
Yeah, I don't see Nitron under any of the names that Ottman went under. All
right,
but I did find Tyler Mayne, who went on to, like I said, become Sabretooth in the X-Men movies. He's an actor now. So, big and jacked, couldn't quite wrestle, so he goes, "You know what, I'll be an action star." He's in the Halloween movies, so.
He did pretty well for himself.
He figured it out. But this is it. This is Cactus. Well, I mean, this isn't it, but this is Cactus coming on to talk to you for a little bit. And this is during the time you're pushing him as a crazy person, as a bad guy. And so it's funny to me how you bring him on to the show, and he's even kind of like, "What?"
Yeah, right. He didn't like that. He didn't like that persona.
Yeah.
This is Bam Bam Bigelow, and you're listening to the hottest sports talk show on the radio, the Pro Wrestling Spotlight, and John Anthony on 1440 WNYG.
Back with the Pro Wrestling Spotlight, and I don't know if it's our pleasure or not, but we're on the phone with Cactus Jack Manson. Jack, how you doing?
John, how can you sit here and tell me it's not a pleasure to speak to me again? I've been a guest twice. I've come to your show, to your studio, two different times. I think try to name one other personality in professional wrestling that's been to your studio two times.
Well, Jack, there were some, but of course not as illustrious and of course controversial as you've become in the NWA. Lots of things have been happening for you. First of all, I just want to say congratulations on really just working in the NWA. I guess it's almost on a full-time basis now, traveling all over the country and turning a lot of heads, not only from the wrestlers and the people within the organization, but of course the fans out there, those who hadn't had the opportunity to see you wrestle, and I'm sure they are unbelievable as far as the comments we've been hearing about some of the people, what they say about you?
Well, the people who watch your show, they called in. Some of them already had taken note, even when I was in the bad tag team situations. And now that I've got some guidance from Kevin Sullivan, sure, they should be taking note. I've racked up some pretty good wins.
Okay, before we get into the Sullivan situation, I know that is a topic which we really need to discuss here. You had started again in the NWA. The last time you were on the show, you had your difficulties with tag team partners. And they matched you. They paired you up with a guy who was the captain of the varsity club last year, one of the top wrestlers in the NWA, Mike Rotunda. And now you didn't get along with him. What gives? I thought this guy would be a good partner for you.
Well, did you see the match we tagged in?
Yes, I did.
We got along.
To the end, I guess, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, I can't explain that. Sometimes, if you believe heavily like I do in destiny, and not so much in rationalizing, then maybe you'll understand why I did that. It just was like pieces of a puzzle that fit together. Kevin Sullivan on one end, Mike Rotunda on the other one. It seemed to be out with the old and in with the new. Mike Rotunda was old. He deserved to go, and I sent him on his way.
Now, did this have anything to do your attack on Rotunda with the fact that maybe his animosity with Sullivan now, because they were partners and they were part of the varsity club together? Did Sullivan direct you and tell you to do a number on Rotunda?
No, actually, Kevin was really impressed with my skills of improvisation. He thought that was the thing that needed to be done for Kevin, but he never told me that. At the time, as he may have said, that the only thing that Kevin and Cactus Jack talked about was art and artists and fine wine and things like that. It wasn't until he saw the job I did on Mike Rotunda, that how badly I beat him, that he realized that maybe that our relationship could go beyond the art range and maybe be a professional one.
Well, now you are affiliated with people call him the evil genius of professional wrestling. Other people call him the games master. He's one of the most evil individuals ever to step inside a squared circle. Now, you formed an allegiance with him and also with another maniac by the name of Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer. You're calling yourselves Slaughterhouse?
The Slaughterhouse.
The Slaughterhouse. Now, I noticed on television this past weekend, Sawyer could not be restrained. It took Sullivan's getting a steel chain wrapping around his throat and choking the man out before they could control him. Now, this is the type of tag team partner I guess you could probably get along with.
Well, I think Buzz had the flu that day. I think he was feeling a little under the weather because generally he's a little more subdued. No, I don't like Buzz Sawyer.
Personally, you don't like him? Or?
I don't like him personally. But Kevin told me to try to make the best of it, so we'll see if we can get along.
Also, you've had some wars recently, not only with Rotunda, but Norman. Are you sure you're not just having Sullivan have you do the dirty work for him?
I never even thought of that, John. But no, I don't think that's the case. I think that Kevin sees in me the flip side of him. He sees things that he can't do that maybe I can, and things that I can't do that he can do. So maybe if I, Kevin doing the legwork and me doing the high work, then we'll get rid of Norman. We got Buzz Sawyer in there now. Personal feelings aside, I mean, between the three of us, do you think that Norman and Mike Rotunda can stand up to the Slaughterhouse? Let me tell you about the Slaughterhouse. This is my motto. Something I told Kevin, I said, it's a friendly place, the house we live in. It's a friendly place. And John, if Norman wants, if Mike wants, why don't they stop by? Stop by the Slaughterhouse. You can check out anytime you like, but John, they can never really leave.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like maybe the house that was in a movie called maybe Texas Chainsaw Massacre. That's what it seems to me. Of course, with Kevin's devious mind and your ignorance to pain, not only inflicted upon yourself, I saw on television recently you standing on a ring apron, and I forgot who the poor individual was, but you leaped over the guard railing that surrounds the ring. I don't know, it must have been a good 15-foot leap. And, of course, this type of move is dangerous, not only for your opponent, but for yourself. But it just seems like you still, you just don't care about the pain inflicted upon yourself.
let me get one thing straight with these people who don't seem to understand something. John, they say I don't feel pain or I don't acknowledge it. I acknowledge pain and I feel it and I understand it better than anybody who's ever walked into a ring does. The difference between me and them is that I understand pain, I feel it, but I thrive on it. It doesn't mean I like it. It means I accept it because I've been dealing with it for a long time. I've been dealing with pain since the moment I stepped out of the cradle. And I accept it, I deal with it, and I thrive on it. And that's why the people, as much pain as I may feel, now maybe I'm in more pain continually, John, the secret to my success is this, very simply, all of my body hurts all of the time. So for people to say I don't feel something cheapens everything that I do inside the ring or outside the ring. All I need, if I got a concrete floor to land on, I'm happy, because that's my home. That's where I sleep, that's my bed, that's where I make my living. So if I leap over guardrails, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because as long as you accept, it's not a question as to what's going to happen in my future. If I leap off an apron, it's not a question of what it's going to feel like because I've been there and I understand it. And like I said, I thrive on the feeling.
Cactus Jack. My goodness. I love the chemistry we were developing there. And that was a pre-tape. That wasn't a live call-in. I remember taping that with him. And I think that was his third appearance on the show. He had gone into the show a couple of times in person. But yeah, that and it's really interesting to listen to back then. It was really cool.
Something I noticed in there was a thing that continues throughout his entire career. And it's interesting because it's almost like he's trying to put a stop to it. But the idea that, and maybe you remember him asking you to ask him this, but like the idea that he enjoys pain was something that remained on commentary throughout his career. And I don't know if that was because he wanted them to push that he doesn't feel pain so he could then cut the promo about how he does feel pain.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
like early on in there, he's like, I feel it. It's just that I thrive with it. Because I remember him addressing that with Jim Ross and WWF 10 years after this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, this was kind of the early iteration of that and definitely felt, you know, wasn't afraid of it. Felt it. He dealt with it from the time he was in the crib. You know, and he was always thinking down the road, always the evolution, always thinking about where he was going with it and what he wanted to do with the character. And all of this early stuff is just so cool that it's out here, that we could hear it again and listen to these early, early interviews with him as he was developing this amazing career of his.
Yeah. When you think about when you watch his matches with the lens on of, it's not that he's no selling, like, and he never no sold. He never like took a move and then just stood there like, bah! Like he didn't do the Hulk up or the Sting, or he always sold the move, but he always came back from it like either quickly or slowly. But it was the idea of like, no, it's not that I don't feel it. It's that I'm like almost not savoring it, but fueling from it, you know? Which is kind of cool to watch his matches with that lens, you know?
Yeah, you know, the ironic part, too, is when he was just starting out and doing these moves and how he heard from so many different people, from the bookers to even some of the fellow wrestlers, that not only was he risking long-term damage to his body, which he was, and it's evident today, but there were people saying that he was exposing the business because of what he was doing.
Yeah. Yeah,
the idea was just that so you different. Could like the Ole Andersons of the world, he couldn't get anywhere with a guy like that. He just, and even Flair.
Yeah, I was about to say Flair ripped him to pieces as a stuntman.
Yeah, Kevin Sullivan got him. Kevin knew what this guy had potential wise, but a lot of people didn't.
I think because they also. I mean, I watch stuff now. I mean, I saw some spots the other night from a show, and all I could think of is this is a stunt. This has nothing to do with the wrestling psychology. There's no reason for this. The motion doesn't make sense. He's not aiming for anybody. So it's like, so you really are just trying to do a big bump that people can see. When you go back and look at Foley, it was never a bump for no reason. He never was like, everyone get out of the way so I can go dive into this thing, right? It was always, it was always an actionable thing, an offensive thing, a defensive thing that made him bump. And I think the reason it worked and wasn't exposing the business, if I'm trying to like defend him 20 years later, 40 years later, like his character specifically dealt with pain differently than all the other characters did. So where a superplex might take someone out or going through a single table might be a hospitalization angle, his character fed off of the pain in a way where it might not take him out, even though he's selling. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And he was very spontaneous with this stuff too.
Yeah. Oh, he's awesome. He's definitely awesome.
I can.
I got a question. Yeah. A good dude. I got a question about two guys. I was going to do a clip and I decided against it because I really just wanted to ask you about it. You, Donnie's talking about Rob Ellis and you're like, he's still around? You're like, he looks like a mailman. Do you remember Rob Ellis?
I do not.
I looked him up and actually I was like, you know what? He could be a mailman. He's not all that big. He's got curly hair. He looks old. So it was funny. And then the manager, The Bug, was bringing a lot of controversy to the independents. You remember The Bug?
Yeah, I do. Very much so. Do you know who The Bug was?
I looked him up, and to be honest, I don't remember who he became.
Well, The Bug is Donnie Liable.
Really?
Yeah, with the fly swatter. Donnie wore a mask, and he had the fly swatter, and he was The Bug. He was the manager, so... The Bug.
There was a guy named Royce Carney who was in Detroit and Georgia who went by The Bug Royce Carney. And that's who I found. I did not find.
No, Donnie was The Bug. Donnie got that gimmick and Killer Kowalski let him fly with it, literally.
Oh,
and
my
I
God.
Had The Bug. I actually used The Bug on a show in Caracas, Venezuela. And he was The Bug in one of the matches with Nikolai Volkov and. And then he was a referee, and he also took pictures.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
So I'm going to send you this right now because Donnie Liable, in his True Confessions of a Pro Wrestling Junkie article that we've talked about a little bit here and there,
yeah,
he posted a picture of him as The Bug with Big
there
John
Studd.
And it is beautiful. So I'm going to use that here too.
Awesome.
Yeah, with fly swatter. Well, now I wish I had pulled the clip because I was, oh my God, there's so many pictures of him now that I'm pulling them up. This is so funny.
Share some of them with the YouTube viewers of this episode. Oh. I'm sure they'll get a kick out of it.
And maybe they're all going to be there.
When Donnie stops walking around Bradenton, Florida, you know, covering the Pittsburgh Pirates in spring training, we need to bring him back.
If you
as we start doing this rewind stuff.
I know we've talked about it here and there about you doing one final Weekend of Champions for the fun of it. If you do, there's got to be a single appearance by The Bug.
Yeah.
Just one, like Donnie can be around all he wants, but there's got to be like a 12 to 2
The be, Bug. It's just here. Like a 2-hour appearance, The Bug only 12 to 2.
Yep.
The gimmick table will be just jam-packed with all kinds of Bug memorabilia.
Dude, I'll print all these off. He's got great pictures here. I'm about to send you because, yeah. Like, these are fantastic. Yeah. I'm gonna. We need to ask him if he still has the mask. It's incredible.
Good question. Next time he calls me, which he calls me every day, I'll ask him.
Yeah, ask him if he's got the Bug mask because I got to know. That's amazing.
Maybe we'll put that up on our new Patreon merchandise site that we're going to be launching soon.
Find replica Bug masks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You could sign it. Maybe the fly swatter comes with it.
Ooh.
We'll call for a bug bundle package.
Yeah, the bundle. The bug.
You get the fly swatter. You get the mask, and you get a T-shirt.
Yeah. So good, dude. And then I got to do, man, how did The Bug never manage former wrestler John Anthony?
Yeah, that was something that I wish would have happened.
Could have got there.
Maybe we can, amazing. You know, maybe we can do it now. I'll get in the ring.
Yeah, one night only.
No.
John Anthony, maybe Sonny Blaze.
You know, oh, what else? Yeah.
You'd probably have to do the job for Sonny, though. I'm not going to lie.
And we'll find George from Lindenhurst to do the announcing.
Beyond the Table. Ugh, gotta be amazing. All right, well, let's go on. This was pretty cool. This was a caller. This is something you could never get away from. The idea of people thinking you were sponsored by who you liked. You just were not shy about it. This is what I like, and so I'm going to promote who I like. And so here's someone calling in claiming this is an NWA show.
Let's take a call, Rocco from Lindenhurst. Rocco, you're on the air.
Hi, John. What's up?
How you doing?
Yeah, you know, this show is devoted to the NWA, right?
Not exclusively. You know, the WWF just doesn't really cooperate with us, so...
Well, I know it's most of the time, but do you still think the NWA is better than the WWF?
I think as far as their wrestling talent goes and how they go about their wrestling, yeah, of course, I think that their wrestling is better. As far as marketing, as far as the larger promotion and who's the best in marketing their wrestlers, the WWF is hands down number one.
Well, this is where I have the one fault with you. I think, I don't know how you can think that. I mean, great, they got granted, they got great tag teams, but the WWF has better singles wrestlers. I mean, because they're not champions doesn't mean they're not good.
Well, I'm not saying they're not. I think guys like Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, is a tremendous wrestler. Ted DiBiase is a great wrestler. You look at guys like Randy Savage, super wrestler. These guys are just up to par, if not better, than the guys the NWA has. I'm not saying the WWF doesn't have tremendous wrestlers. They do. I try to give as much information, and I try to make this show, as far as for the listener out there, enjoyable for the fact that they can talk to different personalities. And unfortunately, at this point, the WWF doesn't cooperate with us. I try to make it where you people like to call in and talk to celebrities as well. You know, and I don't have that access to WWF guys. That's why maybe we push NWA more. The NWA advertises with us. They give us tickets. WWF does nothing for us. Unfortunately, that's where they are with everybody, not just this program.
I mean, I love your show, but it's just a little bit more centered around the NWA.
Well, I explain the reasons why, because they do cooperate. They give us tickets. We have access to their wrestlers for interviews. If the WWF would provide the same service to the wrestling fans, not necessarily my program, but if they would give you, the fans, the opportunity to talk to their wrestlers, if they gave you, the fans, the opportunity to win tickets or to give us any information at all, we would be more than happy to give them more time in the show. It's up to the WWF. The NWA and the independent groups give us access to wrestlers and to tickets, so that's why we focus a little bit more attention to them.
Thanks a lot for your time, John.
Okay, thank you, Rocco.
Bye.
661-1440.
It was a pleasure, John.
And it was great that after the trip, no one got arrested or anything. It was close.
It was close. Got a little worried if we're going to get out of Philadelphia.
Yeah. I hate Philadelphia. I hate it. How can I put this? Every time I go to Philadelphia, something happens.
It seems like they have something against us New Yorkers. I don't understand.
Pretty much. There was one of our people that went on the bus that almost got yanked into jail at the end of the night.
Unfortunately, that was between two New Yorkers, though.
That's right. Two New Yorkers fighting in Philadelphia. Unbelievable. But anyway, last night's card was, I would say, a little bit more than three quarters filled. Almost a near capacity crowd. And I think the fans last night were just more in awe of the show. You know, as far as even big cheering, loud screams. Some of the matches, of course, got tremendous pops. But the fans, especially in that Cactus match, Cactus Jack, Eddie Gilbert match, it was like they were just there with their mouths open.
I found myself, John, watching the match. You couldn't take your eyes off the match, but I enjoyed watching the fans.
Oh, I did too.
They had some super fans there, including our own, of course, but watching the fans was, getting into that match was just as exciting as watching the show.
Yeah, it was great.
Vinny, that was, I think it was, that was Cactus and Eddie in Ben Salem, Pennsylvania, if I'm not mistaken, that we were talking about.
Was that not the Winter Challenge by Joel Goodard show in Philadelphia?
Could have been. You know, it's kind of ironic. I saw Sheldon Goldberg, who was a friend on, longtime friend, but he had the original cassette of that Cactus. There was a video cassette that we produced with all of the Cactus Eddie matches that I did the play-by-play for. Yeah. And I saw that up there on Facebook the other day. as well as the original three volume best of Jim Cornette, the early days that Jim authorized and put together with me and Shitstain. Interesting. But this is, there was a lot there. Rocco from Lindenhurst is a guy that is in touch with me all the time on Facebook. Still big, listens to the show every week. And his buddy Jim from Lindenhurst was actually, these two guys used to call up to break, bust my chops pretty often. And he, and Jim from Lindenhurst was, he was the guy that used to call from the payphone. These guys were the guys that called from the payphone. But Rock is still out there. Jim is still out there. They're all out there. They, and Rock listens to the show week after week, and he's a friend of mine on Facebook.
That's awesome. That wasn't the Jim and James that used to come in and
he's
help
a patron.
You. He's a patron?
There you go. He's a Patreon. He's on a Patreon. Yeah.
So but that wasn't the Jim. That wasn't the Jim and the James who would come in studio.
No. Those were Seaford, right? If you remember. I don't even know if you heard it. The Paulie Dangerously with Bruce Jacobs' mother, who we made believe was Jim from Lindenhurst's mother. And that whole thing about L.A. Law, and you won't let your kid watch wrestling, but you watch L.A. Law. That was Jim from Lindenhurst and Rock's best friend back then. And we used Bruce Jacobs' mother to play the character of Jim's mother on the show.
So before that, it could be the number one classic
bit ever in the history of the show.
It's definitely top tier Paul Heyman meltdowns where he's just losing it. You know what I mean? Like he's just going off. Did you guys coach his mom? Like, hey, we're trying to wind him up, so don't let off.
No, Paulie just went after it because we didn't tip Paulie off.
Not him, her. Because she fed into it every time.
We just said, you want to come on the air and be this kid's mother. And she did.
She's so good. Natural in the biz.
It was great. Yeah, it was really good. And Paulie, he didn't have a clue. He thought he was talking to, you know, Jim from Lindenhurst's mom. I worked Paul.
That's so good. Did you really have a used car from Lindy Motors?
Yes. it was a Reliant. It was a gray rust bucket, and I traded it out to Steve from Lindy Motors.
Yeah, okay, because you're putting over Lindy
Reliant,
Motors.
I believe.
Yeah.
Nice. Hey, that's the only way I could get cars back then. I trade them out for advertising. I did that more than once. I did it about four times.
And that was it? You're like, hey, let me have this car and I'll put you over for the next, like, however many months?
Yes.
On the radio?
Exactly.
So good. So good.
I bought Steve business. I mean, even Cactus bought his famous Fairmont, whatever you call it, the convertible. He bought it from Steve from Lindy Motors.
Which is amazing because I turned that into a drawing, the picture of you and him in that convertible, which came from Lindy Motors.
That's right.
I love how everything ties in. It's amazing, John.
What a run we've had.
What a run. Let's see. Big NWA news. Tony Schiavone was hired by WWF last year, but he's now been hired back. Schiavone is back in the NWA, and they're also going to bring in Abdullah the Butcher and to team up with Norman the Lunatic, which I just thought was cool. You guys put over Schiavone heavy during this era.
Yeah. Well, he was good.
Talk about. Yeah. Do you like him a lot?
Back then, I did, yeah. He was a mainstay.
Yeah. I'm not saying because I have an issue with him, but you guys were pretty heavy on him. And even the following year, you guys end up – there's a caller who believes that Tony Schiavone is the best play-by-play in the business and think that JR makes a better caller and said that the two of them at a table would be like the perfect table, which I think is funny because that's ultimately how AEW started with – Tony and JR.
Those were the two, yeah. And JR just signed a new deal with AEW, so he's not going anywhere.
Did he? I knew it was coming towards the end of it. I didn't know if he was going to want to or not. Not in a negative way, but in a health way. I didn't know if he was going to want to, you know?
Unless I read it off a bubble site that was not, you know, valid. But that's what I read yesterday.
Could be. I don't keep up with a lot of the rumor mill stuff and the newsletter stuff at this point because I just have so much fun watching the product as it is. So,
yeah.
But obviously there's some stuff you can't avoid getting, especially like when Vince McMahon's getting another article. I get it from everyone I know. They just start sending me links.
Yeah. Yeah. So, hey, listen, when you get reports that he's allegedly shitting on somebody's head, I mean, you know, how could you not read that?
It's worth noting. It's definitely worth taking note of. Yeah. Let's see. The last big interview we had on this show was Eddie Gilbert.
Yeah.
And I thought this was really cool. And this was
a good way to end this episode with hot stuff.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. So let's take a listen to this to see what's going on with him. Again, the longer interview is on
Patreon. We'll edit these three best of shows together. They'll all be in one clip. It'll be one long 3-hour file, and patrons will get it.
Yep. Well, here's Eddie Gilbert.
John Arizzi for Pro Wrestling Spotlight. We're here in Philadelphia, Winter Challenge 2, promoted by Joel Goodhart, Tri-State Wrestling Alliance. We're here with one of the most talked about wrestlers competing in the United States today. Everywhere this man goes.
Good or bad?
Eddie, I'd say for fans who love professional wrestling, it's very good. He's a man that's talked about in all circles of professional wrestling. One of the most exciting individuals, hot stuff, Eddie Gilbert. Eddie, first, can you just fill the fans in as far as in the New York area, what hot stuff's been up to?
Well, I went for a brief period there, about a month of January, where I took off a month, tried to get my head together, get my thoughts together, what I wanted to do with my future in wrestling. And took a little vacation, went off by myself, and came back, went back to work for the Memphis promotion after I'd already discussed terms with the NWA, and I saw that I didn't really want to go to the WWF after all as much as what I wanted to, and I think I'll just save that for a while down the road. But right now, believe it or not, in Memphis, I just had this situation happen with Eric Embry and Tom Pritchard where they've jumped me, and Jerry Lawler right now is my tag team partner, and which is kind of strange in itself.
Oh, yeah, you just finished a bunch of wars with Jerry.
Yes, a lot of wars, about 8 months worth of wars with him, and from everything from hitting with the car to everything. And so it's a little different. We've tripled the houses now in Memphis the past 2 weeks with me and Jerry Lawler being partners. So I'm real excited about what's happening in Memphis right now.
Okay, there's also been a lot of speculation. You had an interesting 1990, to say the least, in all aspects of not only personal life but professional life. You left at WCW World Championship Wrestling. There have been a lot of rumors floating around the wrestling world that you were going to hook up with a new group called Global Wrestling Federation, and obviously that has not happened yet. And if you can give your side of the story, we have heard a little bit about it.
I would like to give my side of the story. I wish I'd be the first one, and there's a lot of guys here tonight to tell you this too. I'd be the first one to sit up and say that I wish there was a new promotion that had the money and had the right people behind it, that it would start up tomorrow, because it would help us all out. And but the way that things happen, this Global Wrestling Federation idea was told to me in June of 1990. And that was during a bad period of time for me, and so I was real excited about it. I kept listening about this idea. I kept being told there was money. I kept being told I would get a contract. I did get a contract, a blank contract to go read. There was nothing ever done about it. As a matter of fact, because of the Global Wrestling Federation, because of the idea, and because of Joe Pedicino was trying to work so close with Jerry Jarrett, it actually had a very lot to do with my downfall as far as leaving Memphis when I did, because Joe...
I got another one. No, okay. Continue.
And, anyways, I was saying, and Joe was telling Jerry Jarrett at the first of the year that Eddie Gilbert's going to be my booker, so you better be finding yourself another booker. And so that started irritating me because I knew there wasn't anything set. There wasn't a contract signed. I was, Joe had been telling me to move to Atlanta. I'm glad now I hadn't, because there wasn't any money. There hasn't been any money as far as I know. And so to me, it was just a big fluke.
Well, a lot of fans, a lot of people in the wrestling business, all speculation said there was $25 million, that there was going to be the biggest new wrestling group since Titan Sports, you know. But it didn't happen. And is there any, you know, what's the feeling generally among the wrestlers today that were supposed to go work for this group? You know, what's happening? What are their personal feelings about it?
Towards that group, too?
Yeah.
Towards Global Wrestling? Okay. Most of them, well, see, first off, the big thing is mostly whenever any of us here, there's a new group starting up, we're all like, sure. And then we hear a certain guy's got an amount of money, we go, sure again. It's real hard to convince any of us that there's going to be a third group or a fourth group or whatever. So it's not really anything new. We hear about this stuff every day. This one, to me, this one gets me more because I saw a guy work himself in on two different television shows talking about the Global Wrestling Federation. I saw him affect my job. I've seen him get people's hopes high. I saw him talk to guys working for WCW, promising them higher contracts so they came to work for it, and then it never came about.
Hot stuff, Eddie Gilbert.
Man, I think it's a real shame.
Right around the time he met Medusa, he might have met Medusa, and they might have clicked on that particular night.
That would not shock me. That time frame
Ask
adds
her
up.
About that.
Yeah, her and Eddie. I mean, you just hear like you hear the interviews and stuff, and you're like, man, it's a shame that he never clicked quite as big and that he died so young. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he could have been huge.
He was like a shooting star with us way too soon, left us way too soon, rather. Talented guy, got in his own way a lot of times, a lot of personal demons. And could only imagine what the career would have been if he had lasted longer and had a big time position in a WCW or an AEW or WWE.
Yeah, exactly. And I love to hear, you can hear how much he respects you and what you're doing. Like, even in his interviews.
I know when he was a little kid. I met him when he was a little kid.
Really?
And I forget, yes, at the WFIA conventions. He was a teenager. Him and his brother, Doug.
Yeah. How old is he at this point?
I don't know, but it was I met him first in 76.
Met him in 76. He was born in 61. So you met him when he was 15.
Yeah.
And so he was barely 29 in this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, at that point, he's known you half his life.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
Yeah, very close with Donnie and all of that. But, you know, this is cool. That's why this is great precursor to the Rewind. What we're doing here. I love the format. We've gotten a lot of positive response from the fans who will hear the best of the February. People are digging it. Share it. Let people freaking know. You like this show? Retweet it. Go to the YouTube page, Pro Wrestling Spotlight, YouTube/Pro Wrestling Spotlight. Start spreading the word if you want us to continue this, because I ain't getting any younger here.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/JohnArezzi. $5 a month gets you in the door. You want to have fun with this show? You want to hear some of these great clips? Just share it, man. Grow it. We've been doing this shit for how many years? You and I have been doing it. 3 years?
Two, right? We met Cauliflower. Or no, we'd been working together before Cauliflower. It's been like two or three, you and I have been doing this. So,
right. But I got a dinner reservation, so I'm going to have to wrap this up. My nephew's hungry. I'm hungry. We're going to our favorite Italian restaurant. We're going to have some fucking chicken parmesan, and we're going to have a good time. I may even get a glass of wine tonight.
I think you should. I think you've earned it. And, you know, like you said.
Yeah, and
share,
by the
like,
way,
subscribe.
I was going to recut the beginning of the show because I mentioned that we're on WGBB in the beginning, the little promo, not realizing it was 1990 and it was WNYG. So there you go. I'm correcting it before we end the show because I ain't cutting it again. That's it. I'm in Port St. Lucie. I'm on vacation. I'm covering baseball. I'm with my nephew. It's our sabbatical, and I've had enough of wrestling talk. That's it.
Hell yeah.
No, I appreciate everybody else's, by the
way. It just ends like with static.
I'm just anticipating my Italian meal in a few minutes.
John, thanks for letting me dig into March 1990 with you. And
I loved it.
We'll see what we got up next. I think after this, we're going to start
the next
college
one
years, right?
The college ones is the next one.
Yeah, John Arezzi, the
college
years.
We're going to have some guests on for that. We're going to have Vinny Kice and Larry Simmons.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's gonna be cool. It's gonna be crazy. And we haven't all been together for 50 years.
It's about time.
I can't even believe I'm fucking old doing this shit.
But crazy? I think it's probably more fun now than it was then. Because you're not in it.
No pressure with this. I don't make any money on this show, so there's no pressure. It's only for fun.
I don't think that's a bad place to be, if I'm honest. I mean, money's nice, but fun's good too. So
yeah, this is good. Thank you, John. There's no pressure here. All right, listen, Marsh. Congratulations on the wedding. Enjoy yourself. We're not going to be on the air next week. We're taking a few weeks off. I'm in Florida. Marsh is getting married. So we'll see you again soon. A few weeks.
Yes. We'll be back soon. So cheers.
All right. Cheers to you, all of you. That's right, folks. I'm wrapping it up. Yes. Join Patreon. Patreon.com/John Arezzi. Share this. Follow me on Twitter or X and Instagram @John Arezzi. Join our Facebook groups and just enjoy the content, enjoy the history. We'll be back in a few weeks with another episode. It'll be 2 or 3 weeks from now, and then we'll be back, and then we start the rewind. So until next time, when we relive more history with you, this is John Arezzi for the Pro Wrestling Spotlight.